Indigenous language expert has been awarded the Mason Jury Medal, Professor Stephen May from Te Pura Wānanga, the School of Māori and Indigenous Education at Auckland Uni, has been awarded the prestigious Mason Jury Medal by the Royal Society Te Aparangi for his outstanding contributions to language rights and revitalisation globally, including Te Reo Māori and Pacifica languages. We find Stephen in Fiji this morning, so I say bula and welcome to the program, Stephen. Kia ora.
Kia ora, bula Dale. Yes, morena, more like moata actually here at the moment, but just waiting for a cyclone to hit us soon.
Well, we're a bit nervous for you then. What's the story? What's taking you to Fiji, and how nervous are you that a cyclone's bearing down on those proud islands?
I'm just here for a holiday, just for the week. But yes, there's meant to be a cyclone coming through from the Solomon Islands and hitting us this morning. So they've battened down the hatches, and hopefully we'll just be sheltering inside Rote Te Whare and seeing it through. So yeah, we'll see how we go.
Well, it's not exactly the sunshine and pina coladas under the palm tree you might have anticipated. All the best with that, mate. Stephen, firstly, congratulations. We have such respect for Ta Mason, and of course being acknowledged in this way is obviously reflecting on your commitment to language issues across many years. What is it that excites you most about working with languages, seeing how threatened they are, and looking at revitalisation efforts, not just in Aotearoa, but globally? It's an interesting area to delve into. Why so?
Yeah, kia ora, Dale. Yeah, it's I mean, actually, it sort of started from the opposite. I grew up in Otatahi in Christchurch in a very monocultural and monolingual environment, and it was really when I first started teaching in Pōneke, in Petone actually, in a predominantly Māori and Pacific school, Hutt Valley Memorial College, where interestingly Chris Hipkins also went at one point, that I became really interested in sort of what I lacked in terms of the background that I had had growing up so monocultural and so monolingual. And that's really what started me becoming interested in particularly Te Reo Māori, but then also as I ended up working in universities, looking at other languages, Indigenous languages and minoritised languages worldwide, particularly Welsh, which I did my doctorate on. So I looked at the Welsh language policy, for example. But what's both exciting and challenging about working in that area is that most of the world's nearly, or approximately 7,000 languages are at risk of dying within the next century, and most of those are Indigenous languages. So there's a huge amount at stake and very little concern about it at a public level. So there's a lot of work to do, a lot of mahi to do to try and not just save but maintain and continue those languages, which is what, of course, happened to Te Reo Māori from the 1980s onwards with the advent of Kōhanga Reo and Kurukapa Māori and the Māori revitalisation movement. So, grounded here in Aotearoa, but there's a lot happening around the world as well.
Te Nokwe, I'm interested that you should delve into policy, because we can't have revitalisation efforts in isolation. Although, I do note that it was the willingness of our nannies, really, who just set up Kōhanga Reo without government funding in the 1980s, that really sparked what we see now as this major revitalisation effort across decades. I'm pleased you mentioned 1982, because I was going to ask you when you thought the major revitalisation for Te Reo Māori occurred, and I guess it does coincide with the generous act of those kui, many of them gone now, who decided, well, let's just gather our kids up in a house, in a garage, and talk to them in Te Reo Māori. It seemed a simple approach, but ultimately has been a magnificent approach.
Aye, kia te tika. I mean, you know, it's a flax roots movement. It's one that's lauded around the world. Aotearoa, I think, is regarded as the most successful Indigenous language revitalisation movement. There's still a lot of work to do, of course, and the language is still not safe, but so much has been accomplished in the last 40 years, and it was, yes, you're absolutely right, Dale, the Kuia Kumatua who were there, and also you know, those young Māori, you know, who were politicised out of the 1970s, who were the first generation of Māori whose parents hadn't spoken to them as children. And so they were the ones who were at the forefront of losing the language generationally. And so they were very influential as well, of course. And Professor Mason Dury, among others, was hugely influential. Linda Tuwai Smith, Graham Hunang Aroa Smith, and others were hugely influential in that movement as well.
Tēnā koe, you mentioned there's a lot of work to do still. Can you explain?
Well, I can explain really by looking at my recent work at the moment, which is looking at linguistic, what we call linguistic racism. And what I'm finding is that it's increasingly evident in Aotearoa as Te Reo Māori becomes more normalised, as it becomes more widely spoken, not just through kura kaupapa and through education, but through the media and elsewhere. As it becomes more visible again, we're seeing an increased resistance to it, particularly from a particular sector of Aotearoa New Zealand society, predominantly older, predominantly white, predominantly monolingual English speakers, exemplified in organisations such as Hobson's Pledge and others. And there was a recent survey that just showed that barely 50% of Aotearoa, you know, was in favour of bilingual signage in Te Reo Māori and English. So there's still a lot of resistance, even though we've had significant successes, as I've said. You know, the language is still endangered, and there's still a lot of racist attitudes adopted towards it. I wrote a recent article riffing on Taika Waititi's observation a few years ago that generated quite a bit of interest when he said New Zealand is racist as. But looking at some of those attitudes that we see regularly popping up where New Zealanders oppose the use of Te Reo Māori or think we should all speak English. So even in our own context, let alone worldwide, there's still a lot to be done.
I've often thought it was a generational issue in that those young people growing up in this country are less fazed by bilingual signage or the use of more kupu Māori in news reading, etc. Do you think that is the case, that we'll see a different attitude towards not just Te Reo Māori, but to all languages, bearing in mind how multicultural our countries become, you know, in the generation to come?
Yes, again, I agree. I think what we're seeing, the younger generation is more open because it's more familiar with Te Reo Māori because, as I said, Te Reo Māori has become more visible. I mean, it's also because of a shift in Māori language policy. So if we think of Mahi Corona, the latest sort of version of Māori language strategy, that shifted towards focusing on making Te Reo Māori available to non-Māori as well as Māori, extending it. And so that combination of, I think, greater familiarity, greater visibility, greater openness is certainly apparent among younger New Zealanders. And I'm glad you mentioned the issue of multicultural New Zealand. I think that recent migrants in the work that I've done also seem to be more open. If we think of all of those adult Te Reo Māori courses which are bursting at the seams at the moment, we also see a lot of recent New Zealanders who are in those courses because they too are often themselves bilingual or multilingual. So part of the real opposition to Te Reo Māori among that certain sector of New Zealand society is they grew up at a time when it wasn't visible, hence all the mispronunciation of the names that we all know, like Tiki Wata, you know, rather than Te Kauwhata or whatever it might be. And they're monolingual English speakers, and it's those English speakers, monolingual English speakers, who are the most resistant, and they still are very influential, so it is still an issue for Aotearoa today.
Well, I'm pleased that the work that you've done over many years now has been acknowledged, and of course we all have such respect for Tā Mason, so if he thinks you're good enough for his medal, then we do too, and congratulations to you, Stephen May. It's been a neat having a kōrero with you. All the best to you and your whānau as you hunker down there in Fiji, and let's hope that the cyclone's not as bad as what is predicted, but you might have to a change and have a your next holiday in sunny Huntly. Thanks for joining us on the show today, Stephen. Kia ora te wātu. You with Urban Māori Radio, Wāte 603 on Lord Omar Turu Te Iri.